So we're never going to have M. Night Shyamalan on the podcast, right? Because I'm going to talk shit about him right now.
M. Night, go ahead and talk shit. And by the way, welcome everybody to Letterboxd Recap, joined again by Natalie, the one and only.
Hi.
What were you going to say about M. Night?
This fucking man pisses me off.
Explain.
You know when there's a class project and you're in a group of, say, five people?
Yes.
And you don't always trust that everyone's going to do their job. And so you're like, let me play every part. Let me do each part of the project. Some people can pull it off when it's like a third grade science project.
Sure.
But when it's a multi-million dollar film, maybe leave it to other people who are more capable.
I know what you're saying. I think that M. Night's a really talented director.
Yes.
But he's not he has great concepts, but he needs to have a co-writer to help him out with his bad tendencies as a writer, because his dialogue is god awful. Did you watch an M. Night movie this week?
I watched The Happening, 2008.
What was your Letterboxd rating of it? And was it the first time watch?
Did I even put it on Letterboxd?
Was it the first time watch of it?
No, dude. I watched it as a kid with my mom.
Mm-hmm.
We got it from Blockbuster. And I love horror since, you know, I was born. And I'm watching it and I'm like, oh, this is so cool. But mind you, I was a child.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like,
child watching people kill themselves?
Yeah. I was like, this is so dark. This is awesome. And then I watch it as an adult and I'm like, what the shit is going on?
That's the thing. He has an interesting concept, but he can never follow through with the writing. That's why he needs a co-writer. What would you give it for a star rating on Letterboxd?
Zero?
Zero.
I'm putting in half because you can't put zero. Oh my God. I did not put it on Letterboxd.
You can't be that mean to give it a zero, I guess.
No.
Any film.
I'm pretty mean when it comes to ratings. Oh, see, it's a two, and rightfully so.
I'm surprised it's even a two, honestly.
Okay, you guys didn't rate this.
I'm going to rate it.
Y'all say you watched it. Oh my.
Yeah, I haven't rated everything I've watched. It's just I don't have time to rate 4,000 movies. I don't have, you know, I can't do that.
I guess.
And I can't rate a movie that I saw 20 years ago and be like, I can objectively rate this.
Eh, well, I can tell you.
I'm shocked it's even a two.
What's his face? Pushing it. What's that actor's name? It kind of freaks me out.
In that film?
Yeah.
Wahlberg?
Yes. And they'd be like,
he's got the face.
He's got one of those faces I want to punch. It's not giving evil, but it's a punchable face. So we can't have Mark Wahlberg on the show either.
I mean, Zooey Deschanel is pretty punchable in that movie too.
No, she also, everyone pisses me off.
Everyone in that movie is punchable. Even Leguizamo, and I love John Leguizamo, but he's punchable in that movie.
Everyone is bad. The one of the opening scenes, he's in the classroom, Wahlberg, and they're talking about, oh, the bees are dying, whatever. And
have you heard about the bees?
Yeah. First of all, so irrelevant to the story. He thought he was doing something. There's no connection to that. He never went back to the bees. There's no connection because people are just killing themselves. What does that have to do with bees? They're not disappearing.
Because evil.
I hate him.
Because of trees. Okay, well.
But wait. For the directing part where I'm like side-eyeing, because there's a lot of side-eye in this movie. Wahlberg goes, when the kids are leaving the classroom, he goes,
hey.
Hey, guys. Nothing.
Nothing.
There's no space for a nothing.
He goes like, nothing.
He goes, hey, guys, immediately nothing.
Nothing.
At least take a beat. At least take a beat.
Apparently, Wahlberg and him butted heads the entire production.
Yeah,
that's what I read.
It. That shit was so bad.
We've lost contact. With whom?
With whom?
Well, I watched a better movie for my first watch this week. Supermarket Woman, which is an incredible Japanese film directed by Uzo Itami. And he made one of my favorite Japanese films, Tanpopo, the ramen movie I've been telling you.
Yeah.
Get on that, Tanpopo.
Yes, sir. I was too busy watching Alien.
Supermarket Woman, I gave 4.5 stars. And it's another food-based comedy like Tanpopo. And it's about this guy who's running a grocery store and his competitors have opened up shop. It's a discount superstore. And so he's losing business to them because of their incredibly low prices. And his market has become kind of lackluster and he's lost like really that thing that used to make it work. And so he actually hires his childhood friend, who's a woman who was a housewife all her life. And then her husband passed away and her son graduated college and is living on his own. So now she doesn't have anything to do. But she's an expert on grocery stores because she spent her life cooking for people and shopping for a family. And so she rejuvenates his supermarket to compete against the big guys. And it's really funny, incredible characters. It's a great foodie movie, but also it made me appreciate supermarkets in a way I never had before, of like behind the scenes of what a supermarket is and all the prep that goes into all these intricately packaged items from seafood to vegetables. And like people actually prepare that behind the scenes and we never even think of that. And on top of that, like we can just walk into a grocery store, buy whatever food we want at a pretty affordable price, which is very rare and lucky to have in the world. Mm-hmm. And it just made me look at that world, that little bubble that we all enter weekly.
Yeah.
It's a part of our lives. And I've never really seen it depicted on screen before. It was really great.
Yeah. Growing up, we had this like tiny Vietnamese grocery store on like this corner. And you'd see the owner, she would like, you know, package things like on the counter or like... Mm-hmm. Yeah, just setting up the shop, like running on her own. I feel like I would really appreciate this movie if I watch it.
So yeah, check that out. I think you'd like it. It's really well done. And the lead actress she's like one of the best comedic actors I've ever seen in my life. All right, let's get into our Letterboxd top four of five listeners before we get back into the rest of our movies that we've watched. So first up, we got Bryce with a movie I've never seen before, Local Hero. I'm going to have to add that to my watch list. It looks like from the poster we get Richard Gere and then someone else. I can't tell.
What year?
I have a screenshot.
Oh.
Google it. Give us a little...
Local Hero movie. If it's the 83 one, it has Burt Lancaster?
Burt Lancaster, yes. Yeah, okay. That's what it looks like.
Yeah, Peter Riegert?
I like the poster, though. Looks interesting. And then we got La La Land, Rear Window. Great movie. Grand Budapest Hotel.
Good one.
Nice, Bryce. And then he recently watched Barbie Tremors, which is a really great movie.
Barbie Tremors.
No. Barbie and then Tremors. And then The Third Man, which is a wonderful Orson Welles film.
Love, love, love that movie.
And then Annie Hall, 5 stars. Annie Hall is one of my favorite romantic comedies.
Romance.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Bryce is a softie.
Sickening. Good job, Bryce.
All right, next up we have Dylan Waddle with a banging top four of Good Will Hunting.
Nice.
Fucking Boston guy.
Boston.
How you like them apples? Then we got John Carpenter's The Thing.
Good one.
Then Fury from David Ayer, which I think is a really good war movie. That's a solid film.
I haven't really watched too many war movies.
I'll make a list
of
good ones.
Sad.
Yeah, but they're like really cool films.
Yeah.
But also it makes you sad, but then also it makes you appreciate, especially wars in the past where so many people gave up their lives for providing us with like the world we live in now. And it's both tragic and inspiring at the same time.
Yeah.
But they're always heavy.
It's just so heavy. Like it's hard to...
Jarhead's like the only one that's not like hard to watch because they don't fight at all.
I was a child and my parents took me to go see Jarhead in theaters.
What?
The only thing I remember was them having sex and my parents being like, oh, we gotta go. I was peeking through my fingers.
They were not looking at the MPAA rating before taking you.
No, it was like back in the day, we were just walking to a theater. They didn't see trailers or anything. They were just like, oh, that looks cool. Jarhead.
Mm-hmm. Jake Gyllenhaal. Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah, Jake Gyllenhaal. Speaking of Jake Gyllenhaal, Dylan's fourth film on his top four is Prisoners. Great, great film. Denis Villeneuve's really, I think, his big, huge breakout in America. He made a few great films before that. I think Prisoners really put him on the map and in the zeitgeist culturally.
Hugh Jackman.
It's so good. Have you not seen it?
Nope.
Add it to your watch list. It's one of the best mystery dramas made this century.
Ooh, I do love a mystery.
It's fantastic. And then it's got like Memories of Murder vibes, kind of, but in America, in like Midwest America. And then recently, Dylan's watched Lone Survivor with Mackie Mac, all about them bees. Last Voyage of the Demeter, which I haven't seen. Everybody's giving bad ratings.
Ooh.
And then Snow White and Depp vs. Herd, the duck. Thanks, Dylan.
Wait, Snow White, which one?
Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, the original.
Oh, the OG.
The OG.
Wow. It's a good one. Was the last one? Sorry, I got blacked out.
And then Depp vs. Herd.
Interesting.
I think it's a documentary made about Johnny Depp and Amber Heard.
It's on Netflix?
I wonder if...
Hulu?
How do they get the rights to that? Probably to the courtroom. Well, I guess it's public.
They just called up C-SPAN and posted it. They just cut C-SPAN footage together.
All right, next up we have Aya El Rada, A-E, on Letterboxd. I'm loving the first pick. One of my all-time favorites, There'll Be Blood. Mm. Absolute banger. The Machinist with Christian Bale, which is a movie that really put him on everybody's minds as being a really incredible actor to watch. And also was really, after bulking up for American Psycho, he went down to like 120.
Dude, he's so insane.
And he's like 6'1".
He's such a committed actor.
Mm-hmm. He had to actually stop changing his body weight because he's experiencing heart problems now.
Yeah, I'd imagine so. He's insane.
I saw a Damon interview because they were in a film together recently. They were in Ford vs. Ferrari. And Matt Damon said that they were like just hanging out, talking about a scene they were about to film. And then Christian Bale got a phone call. He's like, oh, this is my heart doctor. I have to take this.
Oh, my God.
And Damon's like, yeah, please take it.
I respect it because, you know, you go so hard for the art.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we should take care of ourselves at the same time.
Yeah, hopefully. I think he's a healthy guy, though. I always see him running and surfing in photos. He's an avid surfer.
Yeah, I can confirm that he is healthy.
Surfing's a big workout, it looks like. You're squatting the whole time and swimming.
And the arm strength.
All right, next up we have Donnie Darko. Jake Gyllenhaal is all over this Letterboxd top four today.
Scary.
Donnie Darko is a great film. Great sci-fi film. We did an excellent episode on it, if anyone hasn't heard it. And then one of the all-time great westerns, we have Butch Cassidy and The Sundance Kid, starring Paul Newman and Robert Redford, the iconic duo. And then recently, speaking of those two, he watched The Sting, made by the same director, which actually cleaned up at the Oscars with like 8 Oscar wins, I think, The Sting, when it came out. Children of Men, which is one of the greatest films of the century. Then Lucky Number 11 and Encendé, which is another Denis Villeneuve film. Really incredible stuff. Aya, great taste.
Good job, Aya.
Next up, number 4, we have Liam A. Stewart, all the way in Scotland. What's up, bro?
Scotland.
We got American history. Scotland, innit?
Scotland, innit?
Fuck. A little off. Wrong part of the island. First up, we have an American History X, which is a really intense, gripping drama starring Edward Norton and got his second Oscar nomination for, and Edward Furlong. Then Silence of the Lambs, the Jonathan Demme film, which is, in my opinion, one of the greatest American films ever made. And then another one of those, Psycho, from Alfred Hitchcock.
Nice.
And then an all-time comedy, Hot Fuzz, which is my favorite Simon Pegg film. I mean, my favorite Edgar Wright film.
What else has he done?
Edgar Wright did, he did Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, The World's End, Baby Driver.
Oh, okay, maybe it was Baby Driver.
Yeah, he's a great comedic British director.
British, isn't it?
And then our fifth top four for today is Evan King TK, a longtime listener of the show, all the way in Nebraska.
Nebraska, baby.
Evan's been waiting for us to read his Letterboxd top four. Sorry for the wait, guy.
It's so been months. Rude. I've been vouching for you, Evan.
So Evan's got a great top four. He's got Dead Poets Society.
Ugh.
Which I'm getting emotional
just
thinking
about it yesterday.
And you actually watched a similar movie that we'll get to.
That's why. Yeah.
That I've been dying for you to watch.
Yeah.
And then The Iron Giant, all-time animated film. Taxi Driver, one of my personal faves. And then Whiplash, but also Evan made this really cool like amber poster selection for all the films. Really great.
Oh.
It looks great.
Wait, he made that?
Well, so with Letterboxd, if you're a patron on Letterboxd, you can choose custom posters. And so some people like to color coordinate their poster selections.
Cool.
So it's very cool, very
Evan,
sleek.
Artist.
Evan, you are an artist. Slay. Thanks to everybody for sending their Letterboxd top four. If you want to have your Letterboxd top four read on the show, all you got to do is screenshot it and DM it over to me on our Instagram page. Now, I'd like to get into that film that reminds me of Dead Poets Society that you watched recently. I don't know if you felt the same watching it.
Yes.
Okay.
Very much got Dead Poets Society vibes, but can we spoil?
So we're going to talk about the hold. We're going to talk about the holdovers. You can spoil. We'll just do a warning.
Yeah.
Because the holdovers has been out for a while in America. It's been almost a month.
I guess not like a heavy spoiler, but I was surprised when the boys left. And left totally behind.
That's not a spoiler. I don't think.
It's not?
Because the trailer is just the three of them, you know?
Yeah, I watched one trailer in theaters and then
the whole movie's built as three people alone.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. So they had like five kids in total?
Yeah.
And then they went to their little ski resort.
Wasn't that so funny?
I did not think they would leave.
I thought it was a great joke. It was so funny. I was dying. The two shot of Giamatti and the kid just staring at the helicopter flying away. And I was he's like, let's make the best of it. Mm-hmm. It was so funny.
Paul Giamatti.
But what'd you put for a rating on Letterboxd for it?
I'm gonna go right now.
Out of five stars, what are you putting? Ooh. I personally gave it 4.5 stars.
Oh, I did rate it. I did. How do I look at? 4.5.
Isn't that? It's just great.
Yeah. I think 5 stars is just a lot. And I'm not saying it's not 5 worthy, but it's not. It's not a 5 for me.
I've only given 5 stars to 2 movies this year.
Wow.
Just 2.
Well, it's January, so.
I mean, last year. Oh, it's 2024. Zero movies. Zero 2024 movies. I doubt that a 5-star movie will come out in January, so.
Damn. But yeah, I love that movie, and I was surprised when they left. But I love the way it played out. The one scene, I think it was Christmas morning, and Paul Giamatti's character goes to look for Tully. He's like running around school, and he like busts the doors open and goes, Tully! And the camera like pulls out real quick. That was a really funny shot.
There's a lot of great shots. Alexander Payne's a really, really confident director. And it's a movie that I grew up in a lot of the region where it's filmed too. And
it was filmed in Massachusetts, right?
Yeah, it was filmed in Massachusetts and a little bit of it was actually filmed in Waltham, the town I grew up in. And it was just so cool to see that on the screen. And just there's something about wintertime in Massachusetts that it's just such a specific thing.
Yeah.
And whenever I see it in films, it just makes me feel like very nostalgic for where I grew up.
Yeah, and they filmed on location.
Mm-hmm.
They're the whole thing. Studios.
Yeah.
He doesn't shoot
in studios.
You recognize a lot of those places, right?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
There's actually a restaurant I grew up going to as a kid, and my family still goes to it to this day. It's called The Chateau, and it's actually like the fancy restaurant they go to in the film.
Oh,
so they dressed it up.
The cherry.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so the exterior, they showed the exterior, and it's like brick building with red light sign. It says The Chateau.
Wow.
James and I went to see it, and that shot showed up, and I just elbowed him. I'm like, oh my god, it's the chateau. They're in Waltham.
That's so sweet.
It's amazing.
I love that.
All right. Yeah. I'm glad you liked it.
I loved it.
So the next film I watched was a movie that I liked but did not love. It's from James Gray called Two Lovers, and it's a movie I've been meaning to watch for James Gray. I've been meaning to watch it for a while. It came out over 10 years ago. Came out in 2008 with Joaquin Phoenix, Gwyneth Paltrow, and it was good. It was interesting, and it had some really great moments, but overall it had an odd tone and just in kind of an odd character where he wasn't that likable, and even Joaquin, with his talent, couldn't really put it over the edge where it was an unlikable character that you loved watching.
Like one of those charismatic ones.
Yeah, and it was just a strange screenplay. I predicted the ending about halfway through, and when that happened, I was like, oh, so I was right. So it was kind of a lot simpler than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah,
and the film's kind of billed as a love triangle, but it's not a love triangle at all. So it's not what I was expecting walking into it. It was okay. I gave it 3.5 stars, but James Gray, he's a solid director, but he's just consistently. He's consistent at making like good films, but he doesn't really have like that really great film in him. His movies are always like very good, but never quite going past that. Mm-hmm. And this is just another example of a movie that's good, but just never quite hit the potential that he set up, unfortunately.
So you're saying he's mediocre?
He's the worst director. He's worse than M. Night Shyamalan. Yeah.
No. You think he's worse than M. Night Shyamalan?
No, no. Don't he's made lie, some good movies. Bro. His best movie is Ad Astra, which is another movie that's it's very good, but it just didn't quite get there. Mm. He's also made Lost City of Z, which is another movie that's very good, but just... He just... It's his third act more than anything. His third act's kind of flatline in a way.
He got tired, man. He got a break. He wrote fucking two acts.
It's good. But his movies are still good and they're interesting and they're all on the Criterion Channel. That's where I watch this. They have a whole collection of his films on their app right now, Criterion Collection.
I love Criterion.
I know. I tell everybody to get it. It's amazing. It's my favorite thing.
I could lose all my subscriptions and just keep Criterion and be happy.
I actually had just Prime and Criterion for most of last year, but then I started using James's Netflix and then I got Max.
Yeah,
because they have great movies too.
I think I only pay for Max and Criterion Channel.
You know what's really sad is it's on all the apps, it's so hard to like find classic movies. They'll have them, but like to like find classic films.
Yeah, oh, I mean like on
there's the like no apps. There's no category button.
Yeah.
There's no like section because it's the least watched.
Yeah.
And I understand why they obviously order they structure their apps and sites to whatever people most commonly watch, but like they make it hard to find like classic movies.
They're just trying to make a buck, man.
It's sad. It's sad cuz like and then to find them generally you'll find like a list and it's all alphabetical. It's just like they just like put it in an alphabetical list and it's like not really marketed at all on the apps, which I find really sad.
But can Criterion you look up years? Like Criterion Channel where you can look up the years?
I don't think it works like that, but I've never tried that. Criterion does have a great tab where you can search either through year, decade, or through country, or just language.
Mm.
And so if you want to get into it, Criterion makes it easy to, if you want to get into like French films from the 60s, mm-hmm. So if you want to get into the new wave, you can make your search parameters French 1960s go.
Yeah.
And it'll have I love that aspect to it. It's a great app.
Yeah, it helps you like expand your horizons.
Everybody should.
Yeah.
Now before we get into more movies, I want to throw out some unsubscribes cuz James and I haven't recorded an actual main episode in almost 3 weeks and that's when we usually do the unsubscribes. So I have a bunch of them right now. So I'm going to read them off. First up, we got Andrew Kruder wrote in our Whiplash episode, Carol Danvers is not Supergirl, it's Captain Marvel. You guys must hate all Marvel movies unsubscribed. And I wrote, whoops.
Oopsie daisies.
Got me. My bad.
Marvel's fun.
And then John Paul Roman wrote on our movie news episode, bruh, the Chargers play in Los Angeles, not San Diego. Do you guys even watch sports? Unsubscribed. But this is because the Chargers played in San Diego for like the last 30 years and they just switched to LA recently. So it's still like glued into my mind that it's the San Diego Chargers.
I mean, this sounds odd, but I don't have any connection to any sports teams anymore.
Mm.
And so these teams, I don't connect them with their state. They just are who they are. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I guess. For me, the city's just as much a part of the name as the name is.
Chargers just, like, lives up in the air. Like, I don't, like, oh, yeah, that's San Diego, or, like, that's L.A.
But they were San Diego for, I think, from the 80s until, like, 5 years ago, and then they moved to L.A.
Mm.
But he got me. John got me. All right, this is a great one. So Lewis wrote in our news episode, don't get me wrong, I love this show. It's amazing. I love your chemistry. But the fact that James is overseas and not with Anthony because he got bigger than the podcast and is a big shot now in the movie making world is just sad to hear and unsubscribed. All jokes aside, I can't get enough of your show and really happy you guys are still doing great.
Aww.
That's great.
That was a good one, though, because we feel the same way. Yeah. Thanks a lot, James.
Thanks, James. Big shot, James.
Big shot, James. Posting pictures of sun and grass.
All right, next up we have motherfucking OG. That's his name on Instagram.
Oh, I'm like, who?
Carl Reiner is more than retired. He's unsubscribed. I think it's because we said something wrong about Reiner in an episode. I can't remember specifically. And then we have Kay Coaster wrote, "How dare you disrespect Star Fox by calling him Sky Fox? Unsubscribe."
Star Fox, like the video game? Game.
Yeah.
LOL.
It was probably James. Sorry, bud.
Yeah.
And then we have Chaz Michaels wrote, "Gran Turismo sucked. Unsubscribed."
Damn.
Oh, my God. I love the unsubscribes.
Do they ever actually unsubscribe?
I hope not.
I was going to say commit to the bit, but yeah, don't do that.
I think it helps because they want to, everyone wants to hear their unsubscribe read aloud.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But I hope they don't unsubscribe.
No, don't unsubscribe. Do not commit to
the bit. M. Night unsubscribed today.
I just remembered. You know what?
Sorry, M.
No, we can do, I can do my own episode about M. Night.
We should do an episode, you and me, on The Happening, and then an episode on the rest of the Twilight Saga, now that I've watched it.
God, yes.
All right, before we get into the rest of our movies that we've watched, don't forget to make a comment in our Hans Zimmer Movie Draft episode if you want to win a free poster from movieposters.com. Again, in order to win a chance for a free movie poster, go to the Hans Zimmer Draft episode on YouTube, make a comment, and that will put you into the contest to win a poster from movieposters.com. All right, next up, I saw Oppenheimer in IMAX with a Q&A with Hoyte van Hoytema, Jennifer LeMay, the editor, and then Ludvig Göransson. And it was fucking awesome. And to see it in IMAX again was mind-blowing.
What?
Yeah.
When was this?
Last week.
That's crazy.
So they hosted an event. And it was a, do you know the Sean Fennessy podcast? I don't know. I didn't know the podcaster, but he's a podcast with The Ringer. And so he hosted the event. And so they screened the film. And then those three came out and they recorded basically, it was a Q&A podcast episode for his podcast.
Wow.
We weren't big enough for it though. But we, you know, one day
they'll. No. Next week. We're manifesting
Hoyte,
here.
Hoyte. I want Hoyte on the show.
Wow, that's crazy. Wait, it's on your list of people.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would love that for Hoyte.
It's hard to hunt people down, okay?
I know. I understand. But it was really cool to see those three craftspeople in the room talking about the film because those three facets to film production are essential: cinematography, editing, and music. And they really do make a movie. I think that all three of them will win Oscars this year for their work. And it was just really fascinating to see behind the door, what they had to say about the film and the filmmaking process. There were a couple cool tidbits where Hoyte van Hoytema said that Chris Nolan likes to, so usually even when people shoot on film, they'll still watch their dailies digitally. So they'll watch digital scans of the film prints the next day.
Yeah.
Whereas Nolan likes to watch his IMAX film prints dailies on IMAX film.
Of course he does.
So
fucking course
he has a trailer on set, and Nolan will screen the IMAX film footage or whatever, also the 65 footage they shoot the previous day, and so they'll watch it on an actual film projector in like his big trailer.
How big is this trailer?
It must be pretty big. It's Nolan.
What?
It's like a Will Smith sized trailer.
6'2"? No.
And so Hoyte said that Nolan, him, and a few main heads of the departments of production will watch the dailies every morning from the previous day, make notes and stuff. And then sometimes Jennifer LeMay, the editor, visited for like a week and did the same thing. And then Ludvig Göransson visited for like a few days to get a sense for what was going on. But it was really cool to hear that because, I mean, to think that he loves film so much that he's screening dailies on film too is just unbelievable. Like, I doubt nobody does that.
Yeah, that's crazy. Well, no one... Not everyone can.
Yeah, he's earned that right to like get whatever he wants and do it. It's cool to hear that process. But also, when they were filming in the LA area, they would actually watch the dailies at the Universal CityWalk IMAX theater.
Is that the one that we went to?
Yeah, so that's like the big theater at Universal Studios, and it's an AMC. And so whenever they needed to, Nolan and the crew would take the film footage and watch it at the Universal AMC CityWalk IMAX.
So crazy.
Isn't that insane? So like you could have been like in a theater watching a movie, and then upstairs Nolan and his team are watching dailies from Oppenheimer, like in the theater.
Yeah. We need to schedule our screenings for when he's shooting next.
Yes, absolutely. But I gave the film 5 stars again.
Wow.
And it's the third time I'd seen it. And it was great to see it, 7 months since I previously saw it in July?
Let me see.
Because usually when that's the case, you see it on DVD or Blu-ray or on streaming after you've seen it in theaters. So it was really wonderful to see it again on the big screen in the best possible format. And I mean, I just was once again astounded. I saw a lot of new things. I felt new things, and I saw things became clearer with the filmmaking and why he structured the story the way he did. And it was really great and very enlightening to have that space from the last time I've seen the film and to watch it in a lot of ways in a new, fresh mindset.
Yeah.
So it was unbelievable. 5 stars once again. And I wrote for my Letterboxd review, Oppenheimer is coming for all the Oscars.
He's coming for him.
He's coming. Oppie's coming.
I should rewatch it because I gave it a 4.5.
Well, it's actually screening right now in a good number of theaters on 65.
Hmm.
Yeah. They're projecting on the 65 on 70 millimeter film.
Got it.
So you can't see it in IMAX. That was just like a one night
thing.
You
had a special, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, we get it. Okay.
All right. What's your next watch for the week?
What was it? Oh, Arrival.
Mm.
I was showing a friend because they had never seen it. I fucking love that movie so much. It's my top four. Is it four or five? Four?
Top. It's on your Letterboxd top four? Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Because I also read the short story, but I read it after I'd already seen the movie.
The Entire History of You, or is that what it's called? Yeah. I think so.
It's the like Story that. Of You.
The Story of You.
Yeah. No, the Story of Your Life.
Story That's of Your Life, called. Yeah.
Yeah. And the writing is so beautiful. Because he'll write, I remember when you'll, blah, blah, blah. I remember when you will.
So, yeah, you're recalling a memory in the future.
Yes.
In one sentence.
Yeah, because you're reading this, say, like, if you hadn't watched the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But not knowing, I don't think you would catch the language that he's using.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that was really cool.
By the way, your top four is
Leave Me Alone.
Insane. You have Midsommar.
Yep.
Before Sunset.
Yep.
Or Before Sunrise. Sorry. Soul and then Arrival.
I love Soul.
No, yeah, it's great. It's just an eclectic top four. It's great.
It's
you hit
random.
you hit every genre.
I felt like that's what I had to do.
You know? We did a great episode on Arrival a couple months ago, and I mean I hadn't seen it for years, but it's really sensational. It's great.
It's a beautiful, beautiful story.
Amy Adams is so good at acting.
So fucking good.
It's like, how does she do that?
She can be this, you know, professor, and she can also be a Disney princess.
It's the reason, I mean, if it wasn't for that being a science fiction film, she would have probably won an Oscar for it.
Do they typically not win?
Sci-fi doesn't get much recognition at all, if any. They'll get, you know, crafts awards like cinematography, production, or CGI. But you'll rarely see great films get like awards recognition for actors.
That's my qualm with award shows where, you know, sometimes you'll be like, yes, I agree with that. That's great. But they exclude a lot of movies just because it doesn't fit in a certain box.
I mean, look at Nolan's filmography. He didn't get nominated for director for Interstellar or Inception.
Can he get nominated?
Christopher Nolan didn't get nominated for director until he did Dunkirk.
This is why I don't pay attention to these award shows, because they don't really mean shit to me.
Isn't that crazy?
That's insane.
The guy made The Dark Knight, then he made Interstellar, and then he made Inception, and then Interstellar. Zero nominations for directing. He got a screenplay for Inception, but he should have won that screenplay.
It's bogus.
Isn't that wild?
That's wild.
That's why everyone's like, everybody wants him to win this year, because he has received very little love from the Academy. He's gotten a couple of screenwriting Oscar nominations, one for Memento and one for Inception. And now adapted. He'll get nominated for adapted screenplay this year. But that's it. That's all he's gotten for Oscar nominations for him. Like, his films have been nominated for things.
Mm-hmm.
But we're talking cinematography. We're talking music for Hans, stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Editing.
Me to the Academy, please broaden your horizons.
But he won the Directors Guild Award for Inception.
That's
he won
good.
It that year, because I mean, I can't think of a director who deserved it more than Inception. Yeah. For like that entire decade. Because what do you do with that movie?
It's nuts, man.
Okay, what's your star rating of Arrival?
I think I gave it a 5-star. Let me double check.
I gave it 4.5.
Let's see. Yep, 5 stars.
10 out of 10.
Yeah, you guys gave it 4.5.
So for our Letterboxd, it's just me now.
Oh, the Raiders is you.
Yeah, so James does his own. We started that the spring of last year. I just took over the Raiders Letterboxd.
That's why you're so nice on there.
He's harsh on it.
I mean,
he gave Babylon 2 stars, and people give me shit for it. I'm like, I did not give Babylon 2 stars.
Here's my thing. I don't love that we shit on other people's opinions when it comes to, like, rating movies.
Well, some of us don't, but a lot of people do.
Yes.
That's the problem.
Yeah. And art is meant to be, you know, it's subjective. And I think we should celebrate different, you know, opinions and the way we view things.
Not if you have the wrong opinion.
Yeah, not if you have the wrong opinion, sure. But giving a movie a 3-star versus, say, a 4-star, I don't think it's worth, like, shitting on somebody for that.
Yeah, the rating systems and social media have created, like, a very competitive atmosphere for being a film lover. Almost like it's a sports team that you root for against other sports teams in a way.
That's toxic.
Like, you get angry at people for not liking a movie that you liked. It's odd.
And also, being a film lover does not mean that you have to watch so many films or certain types of films, whatever. You can still love movies as much as anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that to defend myself from not watching Aliens. Plural.
Did you watch it yet?
No, I didn't.
You watched an Alien movie and it wasn't Aliens?
I watched Alien, and then I watched an Alien movie, Arrival.
Okay,
but I didn't watch Aliens.
As long as you watch Alien.
Yeah.
But yeah, watch Aliens this week. It's Aliens? Great.
Okay.
Did you watch Alien this past week?
Yeah. Yeah.
Was it your first time?
No, it's like my second half time.
What'd you think?
I mean, I love that movie.
Nice.
I still need to finish it. I was fall asleep.
We'll find out what you think next week.
I'm really sleepy. Yeah, ask me next week. Let me finish.
You have a lot of jobs.
I have a lot of jobs. Speaking of, if anybody has a job.
If anyone in LA works in production,
yeah, please,
let us know.
Let me know.
We can't afford to pay Nat.
No,
unfortunately.
But that's okay. I'm here out of love.
Aw.
And admiration. Mm-hmm. And so I can talk shit on your show.
Let's just talk shit about James the whole time.
Oh my God, when he fucking does that thing with his hair.
What, like he pulls it back?
Yeah, and the way he blinks. Does that ever piss you off?
It always does.
You ever look in the mirror?
How dare he blink?
Because you look like James?
Can you believe like what he like speaks?
Yeah, whenever he talks, I black out. I just lay down. We miss you.
JK, James, JK. All right, next up, I watched one of my all-time favorite films. So when I was in my late teens and early 20s, I was obsessed with Westerns.
Mm.
Like obsessed with like classic Westerns and spaghetti Westerns. And I watched them all. I devoured them.
Devoured
like a hungry boy.
Yum, yum, yum.
And my favorite was The Good, Bad, and the Ugly, which I had seen a lot of times. And I remember I got this like great like DVD box set of it. But now it's just like I can never watch it on DVD. It has to be Blu-ray or bust. But I watched it again for the first time in years. Like I think like I haven't seen this for like 4 years maybe. And once again, I gave it 5 stars.
Nice.
And I wrote, an absolute marvel of cinema in the definitive spaghetti Western. Do you know what the term spaghetti Western means?
Tell us.
So spaghetti Western is a Western made by an Italian filmmaker. Hence the word spaghetti.
Wow.
And
is that offensive?
I'm not offended. It's not as offensive as Trader Giotto's.
Don't even get me started.
But Sergio Leone was a great director. Honestly, one of the greatest filmmakers in history. And he really helped create new cinematic language with his Westerns. And this film is the pinnacle of him as a director and filmmaker. Ironically, for being probably the most iconic Western, it was shot entirely in Italy.
Wow.
Yeah, all the spaghetti Westerns shot in Italy.
A Western in Italy. Like saloon. Oh my God. What do you call it? Tumbleweed?
Yeah.
Did they bring tumbleweed from the U.S.?
No, there are deserts. There are deserts in Italy.
No. It's only America.
There are deserts in Italy.
They brought the sand
and
over.
And then also Sicily is filled with deserts. So, but ironically, I mean, people think that this is like an American Western. It is an American movie. They made it for America.
Mm.
But it's really just unbelievable. The filmmaking, the cinematography, the editing, the music, Ennio Morricone's best score. And have you seen this yet?
No.
So if you're going to watch a Western, make it this one.
Okay.
It's 3 hours, but it honestly flies by.
3 hours.
Because the cast is great. The characters are amazing. Clint Eastwood is just, without a doubt, one of the most dynamic movie stars, one of the most incredible presences ever. Like when he's in the frame, it's like, this is like different kind of movie from anything else. Like he just had
he
that.
Owns the scene.
Exactly. He just had that star power magnetism that, you know, you just can't teach anyone. Even his son doesn't. His
you
son
have doesn't. Or you don't.
Scott Eastwood doesn't even have a fraction of it. You
no,
know what I mean?
No offense.
But when Clint Eastwood, especially in his prime, stood in front of the frame, you're like, oh my God, who is this guy?
Yeah.
And he's just a perfect lead, and especially for the Western genre. But this is unbelievable. It has the greatest, probably the greatest made scene ever, which is the big finale. And I mean, it's just unbelievable. I could talk. We got to do an episode on this. I love it so much.
Is he still alive?
Clint?
Mm-hmm.
He's making a movie currently, directing, with Nicholas Holt.
Now, if I don't hear from you in a year or two, I assume you're dead. Yeah. I thought half of Hollywood was dead. Anyway.
Well, Clint's just been the most prolific director, given his age. He's made, like, over 10 movies just this century.
He's, like, what, late 70s or early 80s?
It's late 80s.
Late
he's
80s?
Old. Yeah, he's old.
Damn.
Old guy. He was like 40 when he made this movie. He was 66.
Oh, shit. Good for him.
He's a war veteran, and his boat got sunk, and he got rescued on a life raft. And because he went through that experience, the army didn't send him back out. And so he...
That's how we have him.
So then he was able to leave like with honorable discharge and then start acting.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
That's a crazy guy. Crazy, crazy man.
Okay, what do you have next on your watched movies list?
That's it.
That's it?
Yeah.
No worries, because I got a couple more.
Of course you do. But it was a rough week for you. You didn't watch as many as
I only watched seven. Yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Six. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And the one I'm about to mention is actually just a short film. That's only 30 minutes long. But my God, it was good. I watched Wallace and Gromit, The Wrong Trousers.
Gromit.
Have you seen this one?
I don't think. I think
have you seen any? Have you seen memes of like this penguin with the handgun?
Yes.
He's got a revolver. So search The Wrong Trousers, Feathers McGraw. So this is, I mean, I grew up on a few of the Wallace and Gromit shorts and stuff, like the DVDs and VHSs. This one actually won the Academy Award for Best Short Film.
What?
It wasn't even just Best Animated Film. It was Best Short Film. That's how good it is.
Wow.
It's really well done. It's perfectly directed. Really great score. Very tight script. Overall, it was sensational, and I gave it 5 stars. Okay, you're looking at the penguin?
Yeah.
So that's Feathers McGraw. He's the villain. And so this movie is about Wallace and Gromit. They're broke, and Wallace decides to sublet one of the bedrooms, and the new tenant is this mysterious penguin who doesn't really speak at all. And then Gromit, suspicious of this new resident of the house, starts following and trailing the penguin, learning that this little penguin is scheming something. Very suspicious guy.
I mean,
and it ends up becoming the penguin had this elaborate plan to steal a prized diamond from a nearby museum using Wallace's recent invention of the techno trousers.
That's Gromit, a fun story.
It's great. Gromit gets onto the case, and that ensues in a really fantastic action scene. But what's great is just that Feathers McGraw doesn't say a word at all. But he's an amazing villain and antagonist. And there's this part where Gromit confronts him, and then out of nowhere, the penguin just pulls out a revolver like from within his coat, like his feathers. Mm-hmm. It's like, what a like a little cowboy revolver. It's
silently pulling out a revolver.
It's so absurd. And I cackled, and then it culminates in a really fantastic and dynamic train chase sequence on like a toy train around the house. Overall, it was really funny. It's very smart and really well crafted, and I had a great time. It's 30 minutes long, but I was completely hooked from start to finish. And I don't watch many short animated films, but I can't imagine one doing much better than this.
It's a claymation.
Claymation. And the Letterboxd poster I chose was actually, it's a spoof of the Red Dead Redemption 2 poster where Arthur Morgan is on the video games poster is now Feathers McGraw holding his revolver.
You did that?
I was like, this is the best poster I've ever seen on Letterboxd. It's amazing. And the film is highly regarded. It's got a 4.2 on Letterboxd. Wow. So everybody loves it. It was really great. If you got 30 minutes, check that film out, anyone.
I got 30 minutes.
And then my final watch of the week was an Eric Rohmer film who is he's still alive. He's like 80. French director. He started out in the 60s, but really came into prevalence in the 80s and 90s. He kind of brought the French New Wave into a contemporary context with his films. Mm. And a lot of his films deal with relationships and just people. And so this film is about this young guy. He's a math student, and he's staying at a friend's apartment in the south of France for a summer-long vacation. And his friend's gone, so he's just living in his friend's apartment for the summer. He's waiting for his kind of girlfriend to show up and join him, but she's basically ghosting him. And so he's just, like, very lonely, very sad.
Very French.
Yeah, very French. He is very French. And then just wandering around aimlessly. He sparks up a friendship with a local girl. He really likes her, but he ends up quickly learning that she's got a boyfriend who's out of town. And then she actually encourages him to date another girl in town, and he does. But then that creates kind of like an animosity and jealousy between the two of them. And then his sometimes kind of girlfriend shows up as well. And eventually he's found himself from one moment being completely lost and lonely and aimless to a few weeks later. He's juggling three girls. And but it's really great. Eric Rohmer is if anyone likes Richard Linklater films, especially the Before trilogy, all of his films are really about people talking. And it has that really authentic, realistic conversational dialogue that really feels like he just put a camera up and just started filming people.
And you feel like you're part of the conversation too.
Exactly. And another thing that Rohmer did, which is why I said he's got that new wave influence that they started in France with Godard and Truffaut and a couple others, is they would film just out anywhere. They would take a camera and bring it outside. They wouldn't get permits. They wouldn't
guerrilla style.
Yeah, they wouldn't rent a location. They wouldn't build huge sets and extras. They would just like, okay, this conversation takes place on the street on the sidewalk. Let's just film our two actors there. And so Rohmer did that in this film as well as many of his others. And you can just, it's this huge beach town and there's literally hundreds of people all over. And you can tell it's like they didn't have the budget to pay for 1,000 extras. And sometimes if you have a keen eye, you can see like people in the background, like clearly looking at like, is this a movie or something? Mm-hmm. Like they're looking like right at the camera, but like there's a very small in the frame, but you can see them like gawking at obviously the film that's being filmed before them. But it just really helps sell the world. It makes you feel like you're being put into a real world situation. And most of his films that I've seen, they're female leads. I think you'll really like them, especially the Green Ray. But this is one where it's a male lead predominantly. And it's an interesting thing because he basically, like, in a way, nicely destroys men. Where it's not, it's like he's calling men out on a lot of things, but it's not like, it's not going to, like, put you off of it if you're a guy. You know what I mean? You'll be like, yeah, that's about right. Kind of.
Is it like giving Barbie?
Not so much, but it's more like one of the main themes of the film is that men don't take risks with dating. So for example, he's like, he won't decide on a girl on which one to settle on until two of them decide not to see him anymore. You know what I mean? So he's just playing it safe. Like, you know what? I would like to be with her, but only if she breaks up with me first.
Interesting. So do you think that the lack of choice only happens with romance? Or does it...
Lack of choice for dating?
Yeah. Like, do you think men have an easier time making... Oh, fucking shit. Oh, my God. My life flashed from my eyes.
I would say that men...
Like, career-wise, probably
probably generalizing, men ultimately might not feel as guilty by seeing and talking to multiple women as opposed to women. But I could be wrong. I don't know if you think.
I guess, well, yeah, I mean, that's a bad question because everyone's different.
Yeah, I mean, I know girls that see a lot of guys.
Yeah.
Or talk to a lot of guys.
Yeah, yeah.
But this whole movie, I think it was pretty spot on because he was like, he's in love with one, but then he's like sticking with two because one won't see him.
Mm.
And then three's like, you're being a piece of shit. Like, you should really just choose one.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, I'll choose two if one breaks up with me.
Just make a choice.
Exactly. That's the whole thing. Yeah. I thought it was great.
You can do those, the Venn diagrams.
But it's done with great nuance. And it's like, you understand his situation.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause he's like, it's all out of fear of being alone.
Yeah.
That whole, it's all motivated by
I think that's a universal fear, right? Mm-hmm. An experience that.
Like he's afraid that if he picks one, she's going to reject him. So then he'll have nobody.
Yeah.
Ultimately. So that's, he's motivated by that for sure.
Yeah.
But I thought the movie was brilliant. Relatable. It's so good. And I gave it 5 stars.
Wow.
5 stars. It's just, when you watch a Romer movie, it's like, this just feels like real people, just like a Linklater movie.
Mm-hmm.
And just, there's really no plot. There's no villain. It's just like people in the world, and it's like the conflicts that we deal with everyday life.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's exactly, slice of life. And Richard Linklater has often said that Eric Romer was his biggest influence as a filmmaker and writer.
Wow.
So if anyone likes Linklater, check out Eric Romer's movies.
Eric Romer. Can you spell Romer?
Romer.
See, I did not guess that. I love to ask that because I never know.
Yeah. But cool. That's it for our Letterboxd recap, everybody. That was a great assortment of films. And again, if you want to support the show, feel free to support us on Patreon. We have a bunch of great tiers, as well as the ability to listen to the show completely ad-free with our $5 tier. So if you want no ads whatsoever while you listen to Raiders of the Lost podcast, it's only $5 a month.
Yeah.
It's like a mochaccino. At
a
Starbucks.
Bitch, what?
It's a Dunkachino.
A Dunkamochaccino?
But yeah, Patreon's awesome. James is better at this stuff than I am. He's the salesman.
James, please come back. You're hearing this.
And again, if you do want to win a free poster to enter the contest, all you got to do is make a comment in the Hans Zimmer Movie Draft episode on YouTube. So make a comment there, and that enters you into the poster contest. We're going to pick a winner next week. So good luck, everybody. And thanks to everybody for sending us their Letterboxd top four. It's always fun seeing those and the unsubscribes. And we have a bunch of great episodes coming up this week. Stay tuned, everybody. See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.